This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. 7:37 right now. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani here with me. And we're going to take a look at the biggest business headlines of the day. The G20, of course, dominating headlines because it's just been concluded, right? It's a two-day meeting, first time held, hosted by China and hosting world leaders to discuss all sorts of world issues. One of the key takeaways from that meeting is that G20 leaders have pledged to use all available tools to help prop up global growth that is weaker at the moment. And they're at the same time trying to avoid competitive currency devaluations.
So the question is, will everyone play ball? Because the biggest topic that was discussed includes the OECD being used as a tool to have a global forum on steel overcapacity. They want to identify uncooperative tax havens. All this might affect China directly.
The OECD being the Organization for Economic Development and Cooperation and Development.
So I think it was also quite interesting that Australia's Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, who incidentally was a former Goldman Sachs banker, asked people, his G20 counterparts, to civilize capitalism. In fact, the head of IMF, Christine Lagarde, also said that the G20 people had to fight against growing discontentment and dissatisfaction with ideas of globalization. People are quite insecure about what globalization means. I think it's short of solutions.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do to have a kind of redistributive policy. I think the closest we came to a solution was the United States, who said that we need to move from monetary policy to one of a fiscal, and that's a way for the government spending to help uplift the people. But I don't know whether the US has enough money to do that.
Well, you know, okay, so one of the things that I spoke to Sharad about yesterday when the G20 it was the first day of the G20 meeting, and I brought up the issue of, you know, there's often no concrete measures that come out. There are platitudes, and they come up with a statement that is by everyone, but what truly happens. And he made a good point. He said, look, this is 20 of the most powerful countries, the leaders of 20 of the most powerful countries sitting in one room. It's better to have some talk than no talk at all. Mm-hmm. 85%, they represent 85% of the world economy. And granted, it could be, you know, cakap kosong, or at the end of the day, there may be no concrete solutions, but at least they're sitting at the same table talking about issues that affect world trade.
Yeah. So as a group, right, as a block, they might not be able to achieve much. But on the sidelines, however, it seems that a lot of progress has been happening there. In fact, if you think about it, The Guardian talks about how the UK British Prime Minister Theresa May, she says that six countries at the G20 is keen on UK trade talks. Theresa May has actually named India, Mexico, South Korea, Singapore, Australia, and later on China, she added, saying that discussions between these countries are happening with the UK following the Brexit vote. So this is an emblematic scenario where, while 20 countries don't normally agree on a singular issue, but many of these 20 countries do have these sideline deals that may be proactive and may be seeking for solutions between the unilateral countries' discussion. So as a group, they might not work.
Yeah, I think people would always be try to be opportunistic. Didn't Theresa May say a few days ago that the Brexit may not be as bad as it seems?
Well, so, looking at the numbers, it's not so bad.
Yeah, so all these side deals being struck everywhere. But, you know, just going back to the question of economic disparity, what do you guys think is the solution? Because one of the things that jumps out is taxing the rich as a form of redistributive policy. But the world is now moving towards, I suppose, a trend of lower income taxes. And the rich are really resisting that policy to tax themselves. Mm. What do you guys think are the solutions?
Whoa. I had the solution to that, I could end world hunger.
I think it's the resolve, right? It's very hard. We know that there's so much economic disparity, and some economic redistribution is needed. But how do you do that is very contentious and very controversial. I mean, in the past, you can say that the rich is dangling the prospect of employment and economic growth at the rest of the population. If you tax them, then they would not be incentivized to grow and to innovate and to employ.
Mm.
But today, economic growth is so low, it's almost non-existent for a good part of the world. And unemployment is on the rise, or at least not very, it's controlled, but not very optimistic. So that particular part of the carrot has actually been removed. The ability of the rich and of industry to generate unemployment has been removed. And I guess this is a problem with Hong Kong as well, which is going through that turmoil, that protest right now. Because largely of economic disparity, but also because of democratic demands.
They've just finished their elections, and apparently we've got a new generation of pro-democracy activists who have won seats on Hong Kong's Legislative Council. These are young leaders, and they want greater autonomy. They want to do a different way than the previous generation has done it. We're talking really young. I was talking to Sherrod earlier. One of the apparently the guy who got the second most votes, Nathan Law, 23 years old. He helped lead the umbrella protests for in 2014. Here he is.
The referendum is derived from the concept of Hong Kong people should decide its future. And basically, we are still in a very rough stage about fighting for the rights of self-determination, because it is actually being deprived by the Communist Party, the Chinese Communist Party. So we have to have a very long battle in order to win that back. And for us, we believe that independence should be the option of the referendum, because that is the freedom of Hong Kong people to decide its city's sovereignty status.
That was Nathan Law, the youngest legislator in Hong Kong who just won in the elections, talking to CNN about a referendum on Hong Kong's sovereignty. Quite interesting that this is what he wants to pursue, whereas China has come out to say, well, you must follow the law and we will not tolerate any talk of independence.
So what does Hong Kong has, right, in terms of asking for independence through a referendum? What are the chances? Because I think while China right now is very, very expansive right now in terms of their policy, does Hong Kong stand a chance to even ask for a referendum for independence?
China is grabbing even what they don't have, let alone, you know, giving up what they do have right now. I think the chances of Hong Kong independence would be so low.
Mm-hmm. So the core question right now is, where does the argument lie, particularly in terms of seeking for more democracy and more autonomy? Is Hong Kong truly a rich country? Because if you look at the Gini coefficient in Hong Kong, of course, Gini coefficient is an item or a matrix to evaluate income disparity between the haves and the have-nots. Hong Kong has one of the highest Gini coefficient in OECD countries. That means Hong Kong has the highest income disparity in terms of the OECD countries. So there could be a strong case for income distribution to be well done in Hong Kong going forward.
That explains the dissatisfaction of especially the younger voters who probably are grappling with high cost of living and stagnant growth in wages.
I think the other question is also whether China can challenge Hong Kong's position as a financial center and in the process kind of erode Hong Kong's power and bargaining position. If Hong Kong was still a very strong financial center, then at least China would not want to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs. But I think that position right now is still very much intact for Hong Kong, simply because they have at least some semblance of the rule of law there. And that's what a lot of international investors are attracted to. But also China, they are opening up. They're opening up their financial rules and regulations. And of course, China is trying to innovate as well, which attracts a lot of money going there. So the question whether this really removes one of Hong Kong's key advantages is something to consider tactically. tactically.
Yeah, yeah. Just to add on to that, right? Because Hong Kong still does rely a lot on British law, just like India, just like Malaysia.
Common law.
Yeah, the common law. And because of that, investors seek a lot of refuge in terms of conflict resolution, particularly in terms of the creation of companies and how mergers and acquisitions take place. These kind of laws, they don't have that kind of similarity as they do in China. So because of that, I think Hong Kong has a lot of argument to seek for more autonomy.
You know, I think we would love to hear from someone on the ground in Hong Kong. We're going to be speaking to Evan Fowler in about an hour's time. Evan is with the Hong Kong Free Press, and we'll find out more about what these elections mean and really what the young voters want out of this pro-democracy protests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.